To begin is easy, to persist is an art. Friedrich Heinrich Wilhelm Goethe. Welcome to this week's episode of Warfare, Advancement, and Revisionism. My name is Preston Floyd, and as always, I'm your host. I'd like to thank you all for joining me this week. I appreciate the support. If you're a newcomer, welcome in. I hope you will listen and enjoy and decide to peruse our backlog of episodes. And to all of my returning listeners, thank you guys so much as always. Please be sure to rate 5 stars, download, like, subscribe, all that kind of good stuff that your platform of choice asks you to do to support your creator. I humbly request that you please do so. This week, we will be covering the successor cultures of the linear pottery culture in what is now mostly modern-day Germany, though there is some areas that they did live in what is now Poland, Czechia, Slovakia, Austria, I believe parts of Croatia, and a little bit of Hungary as well, not to mention Luxembourg, Switzerland, Belgium, and the Netherlands, right up until the year 4000 BC. And remember, this, I guess, season is still lasting between 6 and 4000 BC. Of course, we've already covered most of that time frame, or at least half that time frame, I should say, in the last couple of episodes for this region. But we're going to continue on for, I guess, the last half. Now, the first of these cultures we should discuss is the Lingil culture. And this is this culture is fairly early in terms of when it breaks away from the linear pottery culture. And breakaway is not really the right term. The linear pottery culture, or the LBK, was about 500 years old. And, of course, we've talked about how it spread west and a little bit to the east, and how it fell apart fairly quickly in its eastern climes. But the Lingil kind of emerges or starts to emerge right around 5000 BC, while, you know, the linear pottery sites further west are continuing, you know, kind of that early traditions that you would see in the Lingil sites. But as time goes on, again, about 5 centuries, the Lingil continue to develop in the heartland of the LBK. And this is probably due to the fact that they're in contact with a lot more, or a lot of different cultures that the other LBK sites are not in contact with. They're most likely just in contact with each other and the hunter-gatherers to their north and west, as well as to some Cardium pottery culture sites to their south. Whereas the Lingil, you know, they're kind of mostly along the middle and lower Danube. Partly, again, in Austria, Croatia, Hungary, Bohemia, Poland, that area. But they continue the LBK pottery for a number of years after the fact that they start to break away. But one of the things that they do begin to exhibit, probably due, in fact, to their contact with the groups in the Balkans, is that they do begin to practice copper working. So they are in a Chalcolithic culture and a Neolithic culture, if you want to call them that, as well as a Neolithic culture. They have the trapezoidal longhouses that we've talked about. They mostly raise cattle, but they did have a few pigs and things like goats and sheep as well. But they were very very active in mining pursuits. They had huge mining fields of different types of stone, including chert. And that probably helped them discover, you know, metals to, you know, copper and eventually gold. Gold is also found, you know, right around the time copper begins to be used, or a little bit after, probably. But I'll show some pictures. There are sites in, I think, what is now Poland that they have found their copper. They have kind of like these copper discs, as well as gold ones. I think they've been found in Poland as well as Austria. And it does not appear that they had a division of labor for mining. Women have been found in mine shafts, buried, like intentionally buried. They also have found other female skeletons with kind of occupational markers showing that they were, working this heavy labor. They had signs of, degenerative spines and very early arthritis that is very consistent with what you'll see with mining labor. So it's not just women, it's not just men, it's also women that are working in these mines. They have early burials where the individuals are placed on their sides. They didn't have a preference for which direction the dead was facing. You know, some cultures that do this, they'll face either east or west or north or south, like consistently across all their burials. Whereas the Lingil, that is not something that you see. They'll place them in whatever way they want. There's not a direction they're necessarily facing. They also do have grave goods. Typically, it is their crafted materials that are buried. I didn't see any specific mention of food, though it would not surprise me if some type of food was provided to the dead as well. Now, as for their pottery, like I said at the start, it's very close to other LBK pottery. You know, they have these monochrome pieces with etched lines or circles or zigzags and things like that. There's also periods where they don't do much etching and they're merely making, the shape of the vessel. But we have found several examples where they are painted in a wide variety of colors. And this includes, a brown vase with red, white, black, all together, and they can get very intricate with their patterns. But then you also have some that are just, well made, but there's not too much decoration, or at least there isn't evidence that they were decorated. There's always the possibility they had some type of painting on them, but that has been washed, or not washed, but degraded over time and disappeared. And there may not be a way to recover what you see. You also have, they continue the Neolithic kind of longhouse. They have those trapezoidal longhouses. They also produce a number of different figurines, almost entirely. Well, they all are considered female. So these are also kinds of Venuses, which, the Willendorf Venus was also found in Austria very, very early. Even much earlier than this, but they have found quite a few of them. Some of the female figures are standing, kind of with their arms outstretched, and then some are kind of in a seated position. But they're not just developing female figures; they are also, at least in some parts of their territory, they are crafting statues of animals as well. There's a particular one of a ram. Was found in Poland. Now, you'll also see this culture has different names depending on where it's discussed. In Poland, it's referred to as the Jordanow or the Jordanow. It also has, it's referred to as the Austrian or the Moravian painted ware, the Eichbrühl, as well as the Schussenried. Or the Gattersleben. So there's a lot of different names for this culture, depending on where it was located. And there are regional variations. You can see that, every region had slight variations on kind of this this kind of copper and pottery producing ware. And they do have a wide variety of shapes and sizes of their vessels. Much wider, I think, even than the older LBK. So, this is a continual development that they're undergoing. They're not just, continuing their traditions. They are innovating on them and, evolving. And again, I think this is primarily because they do have interactions with cultures to the south, east in the Balkans, as well as the Far East, like the deeper Dong culture, as well as hunter-gatherers and the Cardium ware cultures and their successors. Now, there is some thought that they may have had some towards the end of their period, which they end right around 4000 BC before they were replaced in all of their territories by new cultures, that there is thought that they may have been influenced by newcomers from the steppe. However, I think some of the more recent, and I'm talking very recent within the past, since like 2023, 2022, somewhere in that range, they had found a number of individuals that they were able to test. And they had very, very little, steppe ancestry. Now, that's not to say that they didn't have any, but in some cases, there's no evidence of any hunter-gatherer or of steppe herder ancestry. And then the most that you'll see is, I think they said it was maybe around 3% in, just a couple of individuals. So they were probably interacting in some level with these steppe herders, or at least interacting with people who had interacted with the steppe herders, but it's not very pronounced. Although they do begin to use kind of this Kurgan burial tradition at a couple of places at the very end of the Lingel period, but that may have been just them, developing this kind of idea or concept for this Kurgan tomb on their own, or they could have kind of seen other people practicing this. Maybe they developed it based off of the dolmens from peoples to their west. It's hard to say. But again, prior to this, their burials were almost all just like they had separate cemeteries. They would bury people on the outskirts of their settlements. And then once, cemetery kind of got filled, they kind of moved to a new one. But eventually, again, that does go away, and they begin to start perhaps building these monumental tombs, or at least the very early versions of the Kurgans where the tombs are demarcated and earth is built up. But they're not super elaborate. They're not that massive just yet. And that will not happen. The massive Kurgans will not happen in this region during the Lingel period. Now, this leads to kind of the second culture to begin developing out of the LBK in Central Europe after the Lingil. And this is the stroke-ornamented pottery culture, or as it's known in German, the Stichbander Keramik, or also known as the STK, or the STBK, depending on the sources you're reading. Now, this develops right around 4,900, so about 100 years after the Lingel. They're a little bit further north than the Lingel, as well as a little bit further east, but there is overlap between the STK and the Lingel sites, kind of around to the north of the Danube, and kind of to the south of the rivers that the STK cultures occupied. And they're occupying primarily the headwaters of the Elbe and the Oder rivers, so the river that kind of forms the border region between Poland and Germany, or at least in the modern day, that's kind of one of the dividing lines. And the Elbe, of course, runs kind of through central Germany. Now, they are noted for, incising kind of these very long or broad zigzag bands. They also have what are known as musical note pottery. And this is something that changes over time. So as you know, as time goes on, they're changing how they're developing or how they're decorating their pottery. They also do have some female figures, though they're not as well made and they don't have quite as much detail as you see in the Lingil sites. But they do have them. So they're primarily interacting with people from with trade from the Vulcans through the Lingil. But they are closer to sites along the steppe. And they're probably seeing, this region would see steppe peoples probably enter into it a little bit earlier than where the Lingil are, most likely. Though I don't know that for sure. And they also have, one of their major sites is in Gossak, which I mentioned the Gossak Circle when talking about the LBK. And that Gossak Circle was constructed around the same time, possibly 100 years before the STK emerged as kind of a separate regional culture from the LBK. But it could have been kind of after that. So, there is a sense that maybe the Gossak Circle is kind of meant to establish maybe a new tradition for the peoples living in that area. They don't have any copper that you'll see in the Lingil sites. And that may be due to the fact that the STK only lasts about 500 years. So they started 100 years later than the Lingil culture, but they disappear about 400 years earlier. But they do have sites in what is now Eastern Germany, Poland, Czechia, as well as I think they have some in what is now, I believe they have some as well in kind of like the very kind of western portion of what is now Slovakia. But this is another one where you'll see occasionally different names depending on, where the culture is being discovered or being excavated in. Now, a big break between the burial traditions between the LBK and the Lingil and the SDK is that the SDK apparently preferred to practice cremation rather than burial. Now, the LBK did do both, but they buried far more than they burned, but it appears that that's reversed in the STK. That may have been, something they did to preserve livable land. I don't know. That's just kind of a rough guess. But that is a big difference between the STK and the Lingil culture. They don't begin to practice any kind of monumental burial. And again, they also don't get copper or copper working from the Lingil or from the Balkans. At least we haven't found any artifacts. They do have they do have decoration bracelets, but a lot of that is shells or polished stone and things like that. They too will, of course, continue to use the longhouse, and they do have these circular enclosures like the Gossak Circle that I mentioned a few weeks ago. That is something that you will see at least the larger STK sites. Now, the next cultures we need to discuss, they're kind of all wrapped up with each other. There's a debate on, if they were regional variations of one or the other. But some of these sites are beginning to show some development outside the LBK tradition earlier than what, the big culture that they are sometimes associated with, or the more famous culture they're sometimes associated with. The first of these is the Oberlauterbach culture. And this is a fairly small, at least geographically speaking, culture. And it has a lot of overlap with the STK sites in the southwest of the STK territory. They also have a little bit of overlap with the Lingil culture in their east. And again, this is the Oberlauterbach culture. And their sites are mostly along kind of the upper Danube, the Danube that kind of runs through the south of Germany, or the southeast of Germany. I think most of their sites are concentrated in what is now modern-day Bavaria, the German state of Bavaria. Now, unfortunately, it's very hard to find sources on this in English, because if you Google Oberlauterbach, it gives you there's a town in Alsace in France that shares the name of Oberlauterbach. So you'll get a lot of information on the French town, which apparently is right on the French-German border, and there's a kind of a very unique kind of culture that rose up in the region. There's a lot of historical sites, and it's a very big tourist area. So unfortunately, it's really hard to get hard information in English on the archaeological culture. But again, this is much further to the east than Oberlauterbach Alsace is. But what we do know is that the Oberlauterbach is probably an extension, or at least a group that is more heavily influenced by the Arasan culture. And we'll discuss them momentarily, but because they're so close to the STK and the Lingil culture, they do have, you know, it's kind of like a mix between all three, though obviously more of their more of their material culture is more in line with the Rasen than the other two. Now, the Rasen culture probably grew out of the LBK, but also there was another early kind of smaller regional culture that kind of grew up around the kind of southern Germany and the upper Rhine Valley or lower Alsace. And this is known as the Großgartach culture. Now, this culture kind of broke some traditions in tool production compared to the LBK. They weren't using these they were using microblades, but they were also beginning to flake their tools. And that probably had to do with because they were using a lot more flint, I'm assuming. But that's just a guess on my end. But so they're mixing the microlithic or the Neolithic microblades or bladelets, but they're also beginning to go back to a little bit older or a more traditional flake, like flaking off, like getting a big core stone and flaking off, smaller chunks and then kind of refining those chunks. They would make them similar to bladelets in terms of size, but they're kind of working like an older technique to make newer versions of these tools, which is fairly interesting. In terms of burials, the Großgartach pretty much use the flex burials that you see in the Lingil and in most of the LBK burials. And this includes, burying people on their size, flexing them up like their knees are bent. And they would, of course, bury them with grave goods, beads, jewelry, tools, things like that. Everything they would have been using in life. They're also beginning to develop different sizes and shapes of vessels that you did not see in the LBK. Now, in terms of decoration, they're very similar to what you would see in the LBK decoration. However, when the Rasen culture emerges, which we're going to get into in just a second, this art style changes. And there's, again, there's a lot of overlap between the Grosskartakt sites and the Rossen culture. Most people believe that the Rossen culture kind of itself emerged from the Grosskartakt and more traditional LBK sites, and then eventually they kind of supplanted or took over a lot of the Grosskartakt sites, as well as kind of exerted an influence or colonized the area that the Oberlauterbach culture would emerge in, or subculture as the case may be. Also, this is another one of those cultures that it's really hard to find good sources in English on, but I will, was able to find a couple that did have some nice drawings and examples of their pottery. Now, because of the sources on both the Grosskartakt and the Oberlauterbach, excuse me, lost my train of thought there. Because they're so wide, you know, kind of widespread, their dates on them are debated. But the Rossen culture is a little bit more firmly established in literature, and they date between 4,600 and 4,300 BC. And their big, I guess, change in pottery decoration is that they... excuse me about the sorry for the phone notification there, is that they are beginning to stamp their vessels as opposed to merely incising them. And these are known as goat's foot incisions. And they're called that because they look like goat's feet. But they don't have as much color as what you'll see in, say, the Lingel sites, at least not the examples I've seen. But they do have different types of shapes and sizes than what you'll see in the Lingel or the STK. Most of their pottery is either painted or fashioned to be kind of a very white or very light beige color. Now, another change for the Rossen is their tools. They are, again, kind of making very similar tool types to the LBK and the Grosskartakt. However, they are beginning to move away from flint. They're replacing it with what's known as Plattenhornstein, and this is from Bavaria, so from the mountains of Bavaria, as opposed to the flint that you're getting in what is now the Netherlands. But again, they're making these axes, adzes, is very similar. It's just the main type of material is changing, which is odd because the Rossen, they occupy most of the Netherlands and Belgium, at least where those countries are today. In fact, they occupy most of the North German plain, with the exception of like very, very northern part of coastal Germany, kind of where Denmark and Germany meet, or where northern Germany meets the Atlantic and North Seas. So they're not that far north on the coast, but they are on the coast a little bit more towards the Atlantic. But it seems odd to me that, you know, they're living, you know, where this flint has always come from, that instead they're getting most of their materials for their more, I guess, more used tools from the south, which is a little bit further away. They kept the longhouses. Some of them have been found up to 65 meters in length. And in some cases, they may be, they've been called boat-shaped, though most of them are kind of that trapezoidal shape that we've seen at the other LBK sites and the Lingel sites. So not very much change there. And it has been suggested, you know, there were probably a couple of small families living in these longhouses at the same time. Maybe, you know, a grandparents and then their children and maybe a couple of their smaller children, you know, occupying the same area. Also, most of their settlements, well, not most, but a number of them were surrounded by earthworks. This isn't like the STK sites where you have these settlements with these enclosures in the center of them. The entire settlements are enclosed. So these are probably definitely more defensive than what you'll see at the STK areas. Also, they preferred to have their settlements on very dark black soil, which, you know, they probably had a lot of access to it, being on the North German plain. Obviously, you would want to be where you have the most fertile soil available, but they had more of it than probably any of the other successor cultures of the LBK. So they could be picky about where they're setting up their settlements. Or at least they could be pickier than, say, the other LBK successors. Now, for their burials, again, most of them are buried as opposed to cremated, though there has been some evidence of cremation, though some of this is disputed because the areas where the cremation has been found is kind of areas that have overlapped with the STK. But I think some of the dates on that show that this was kind of after, or it could have been after the STK disappeared. So some of this is debated, some of it's not. But most of the Rasen culture do feature people in a crouched position. But unlike the Lingel, where they were buried crouched and faced whichever way, the Rasen culture almost always buried their dead on their right sides and facing to the east. That is something that some cultures do, but the Lingel doesn't. What's causing this disconnect between the burial traditions of one place or another in these former LTK sites is a very big mystery. But some Rasen sites do show that they are beginning to, at least towards the end, covering some of their dead graves with stone slabs, though that is not very many. Now, the Rasen culture lasts between 4,600 and 4,300, as I said, so not quite as long as the STK or the Lingil. Now, there are a couple of other cultures in addition to the Grosskartakt, but finding anything on them in English is very hard. So I'm not going to really go into detail on those right now, and probably not really in general. So, but I will have pictures of pottery and all this stuff up on the YouTube. Now, there are a couple of other cultures I should get into, but we're already past 30 minutes here. So I was hoping to finish up Germany today, but looks like it's going to have to wait, because I do need to get this episode edited and placed up on YouTube, as well as all the other audio channels. So, yeah, I'll go ahead and call it here for now. I do appreciate you all for coming out tonight. I'll try to have photos and everything up for the YouTube episode. If you guys have any questions, comments, constructive criticism, please feel free to let me know. You can reach me at waradrevpod@gmail.com. You can also contact me via direct message on X/Twitter. You can comment on the YouTube videos where I will respond when I get a chance. Appreciate you all for coming out. Just a little notification about next week's episode. It may be delayed a day or two. I don't know. There might be some plans for this weekend that might prevent me from recording at a regular time. I don't 100% know that, but I will for sure have an episode out, even if it's a day or two later next week. And then we'll have a regular scheduled episode the following week. So, hopefully next week we'll finish up with the Central European cultures, and then we'll kind of go back to some of the peripheral areas that we did not discuss for Europe, places like the Baltic and Scandinavia. And then, of course, we'll move over to the British Isles. And then from there, we finally get into the New World. But, yeah, that's probably still a couple weeks out. So, anyway, appreciate you guys again. Please like, favorite, subscribe, 5-star, all that kind of good stuff. I appreciate it. And we'll see everyone next time. Peace.